The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 14, Part 2. M'Varsh slept not. Small joy had he of that lake of Ravery, caring for none of its beauties, but mindful still of certain lewd hulks he had seen basking by its shores all through the golden afternoon. He had questioned one of the Queen's martlets concerning them, who laughed at him and let him know that these were crocodiles, wardens of the lake, tame and gentle toward the heroes of bliss who resorted thither to bathe and disport themselves.
"But should such a one as thou," she said, "adventure there, they would chop thee up at a mouthful."
This saddened him, and indeed, little ease of heart had he since he came out of Impland, and dearly he desired his home, though it were sacked and burnt, and the men of his own blood, though they should prove his foes. And well he thought that if Jush should fly with Brandok the Ha, mounted on Hippogriff, to that cold mountain top where souls of the great were held in bondage, he should never win back alone to the world of men, past the frozen mountains and the manticores, and past the crocodile that dwelt beside Bavinan. He lay awake an hour or twain, weeping quietly, until, out of the giant heart of midnight, came to him with fiery clearness the words of the Queen, saying that by the heat of great longing in his heart that claspeth it, must that egg be hatched, and that that man should then mount and ride on the wind unto his heart's desire. Therewith M'Varsh sat up, his hands clammy with mixed fear and longing. It seemed to him, awake and alone among the sleepers in that breathless night, that no longing could be greater than his longing. He said in his heart, "I will arise and take the egg privily from the devil transmarine, and clasp it myself. I do him no wrong thereby, for said she not it was perilous? Also, every man raketh the embers to his own cake." So he arose, and came secretly to Jus where he lay, with his strong arms circling the egg. A beam of the moon came in by a window, shining on the face of Jus that was as the face of a god. M'Varsh bent over him, and teased the egg gently from his embrace, praying fervently the while. And, for Jus was in a profound slumber, his soul mounting in vision far from earth, far from that shore divine, to lone regions where Goldri watched still in mournful patience on the heights of Zora. At last M'Varsh gat the egg and bare it to his bed. Very warm it was, crackling to his ear as he embraced it, as of a power moving from withinwards. In such wise M'Varsh fell asleep, clasping the egg as a man should clasp his dearest. And a little before dawn, it hatched in his arms and fell asunder, and he started awake, his arms about the neck of a strange steed. It went forth into the pale light before the sunrise, and he with it, holding it fast. The sheen of its hair was like the peacock's neck, its eyes like the changing fires of a star of a windy night. Its nostrils widened to the breath of the dawn. Its wings unfolded and grew stiff, their feathers like the tail feathers of the peacock pheasant, white with purple eyes, and hard to the touch as iron blades. M'Varsh was mounted on its back, seizing the shining mane with both hands, trembling. And now was he fain to descend, but the hippogriff snorted and reared, and he, fearing a great fall, clung closer. It stamped with its silver hoofs, flapping its wings, ramping like a lioness, tearing up the grass with its claws. M'Varsh screamed, torn between hope and fear. It plunged forward and leapt into the air and flew. The demons, waked by the whirring of wings, rushed from the pavilion to behold that marvel flown against the obscure west. Wild was its flight, like a snipe, dipping and plunging. And while they looked, they saw the rider flung from his seat, and heard, some moments after, a dull flop and splash of a body fallen in the lake. The wild steed vanished, winging toward the upper air. Rings ran outward from the splash, troubling the surface of the lake, marring the dark reflection of Zora Rock, mirrored in the sleeping waters. "Poor M'Varsh!" cried Lord Brandok Daha. "After all the weary leagues I made him go with me!" And he threw off his cloak, took a dagger in his teeth, and swam with great overarm strokes out to the spot where M'Varsh fell. But naught he found of M'Varsh. Only he saw nearby, on an island beach, a crocodile, big and bloated, that eyed him guiltily, and stayed not for his coming, but, lumbering into the water, dived and disappeared. So Brandok Daha turned and swam ashore again. Lord Jus stood as a man stricken to stone. As one despaired, he turned to the queen, who now came forth to them, wrapped in a mantle of swan's down. Yet high he held his head. "O Queen Safanuzba, here is that secret gloam or bottom of our days. Come when we sniff the sweetness of the morning."
"My lord," said she, "the flies Hemorrhoi take life with the sun and die with the dew. But thou, if thou be truly great, join not hands with desperation. Let the sad ending of this poor servant of thine be to thee a monument against such folly. Earth is not ruined for a single shower. Come back with me to Castra Belorn." He looked at the grand peak of Zora, dark against the wakening east.
"Madam," he said, "thou hast little more than half my years, and yet, by another computation, thou art 7 times mine age. I am not light of will, nor thou shalt not find me a fool to thee. Let us go back to Castra Belorn."
They break their fast quietly, and returned by the way they came. And the queen said, "My lords Jus and Brandok Daha, there be few steeds of such a kind to carry you to Zora Rock Namtsarion. And not ye, though ye be beyond the half-gods in your might and virtue, might have power to ride them, but if ye take them from the egg. So high they fly, so shy they are, ye should not catch them, though ye waited 10 men's lifetimes. I will send my martlets to see if there be another egg in the world." So she dispatched them, north and west and south and east, and in due time those little birds returned on weary wing, all save one, without tidings. "All have come back to me," said the queen, "save Arabella alone. Dangers attend them in the world, birds of prey, men that slay little birds for their sport. Yet hope with me that she may come back at last."
But the Lord Jus spake and said, "O Queen Safanuzba, to hope and wait lieth not in my nature, but to be swift, resolute, and exact whensoever I see my way before me. This have I ever approved, that the strawberry groweth under the nettle still. I will assay, The Ascent of Zora. Nor might all her prayers turn him from this rashness, wherein the Lord Brandok Daha, besides, did most eagerly second him. 2 nights and 2 days they were gone, and the queen abode them, in great trouble of heart, in her pavilion by the enchanted lake. The 3rd evening came Brandok Daha back to the pavilion, bringing with him Jus, that was like a man at point of death, and himself besides deadly sick.
"Tell me not anything," said the queen. "Forgetfulness is the only sovereign remedy, which, with all my art, I will strive to induce in thy mind and in his. Surely I despaired ever to see you in life again, so rashly entered into those regions forbid."
Brandok Daha smiled, but his look was ghastly.
"Blame us not overmuch, dear queen. Who shoots at the midday sun, though he be sure he shall never hit the mark, yet as sure he is, he shall shoot higher than who aims but at a bush."
His voice broke in his throat. The whites of his eyes rolled up. He caught at the queen's hand like a frightened child. Then, with a mighty effort, mastering himself,
"I pray, bear with me a little," he said. "After a little good meats and drinks taken, 'twill pass. I pray, look to Jus. Is a dead, think you?"
Days passed, and months, and the Lord Jus lay yet, as it were, in the article of death, tended by his friend and by the queen, in that pavilion by the lake. At length, when winter was gone in Middle-earth, and the spring far spent, back came that last little martlet, on weary wing. She they had long given up for lost. She sank in her mistress's bosom, almost dead indeed, for weariness. But the queen cherished her, and gave her nectar, so that she gathered strength and said,
"O Queen Safanisba, fosterling of the gods, I flew for thee east and south and west and north, by sea and by land, in heat and frost, unto the frozen poles, about and about, and at the last came to Demon Land, to the range of Neverdale. There is a tarn among the mountains that men call Dual Tarn. Very deep it is, and men that live by bread do hold it for bottomless. Yet hath it a bottom, and on the bottom lieth a hippogriff's egg, seen by me, for I flew at a great height above it."
"In Demon Land?" said the queen.
And she said to Lord Brandok Daha,
"It is the only one. Ye must go home to fetch it."
Brandok Daha said,
"Home to Demon Land, after we spent our powers and crossed the world to find the way?"
But when Lord Jus knew of it, straightway with hope so renewed, began his sickness to depart from him, so that he was in a few weeks' space very well recovered. And it was now a full year gone by since first the demons came up into Castra Belorn. End of chapter 14.